this color guy I'm telling you about. Would you believe it? He makes as much money as me.
Then he must be twice as smart as you.
From the KKFI studios in Midtown, it's time for Khadija and the White Guys.
We love that intro. Good morning, it's Keith Washburn.
And I'm Khadija Hardaway. Toot toot, baby.
We love that toot toot.
Beep beep.
Hey.
And our guest
this
morning.
That sound like R. Kelly.
Katina Taylor is with us this morning from Dreams KC and Nancy Mitchell with Caring for Kids Network. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Yeah. Katina, let's start with you. Why are African-American kids not getting the same level of education, the same quality of education as white kids?
So you're asking a very loaded question.
bang, bang, baby.
Right? And I would love to say that there's one particular reason. I think the primary reason is that we're dealing with an archaic system that wasn't designed for us. And so when you start talking about shifting the educational liberties and really giving equity, not equality, but equity to students of color and low-income students, then you're talking about upsetting the social order. And so with that comes economic freedom, with that comes political power in a generation. And when you have oppressed a people for hundreds of years and you want to keep that system of power in place, then you deny liberation through education. And so I think that's what we're dealing with.
She came out shooting, y'all. Bang, bang, y'all.
You asked.
That's the way we like to start here.
Yeah, you said a whole lot. I mean, when you mentioned the word equity versus quality, equality, what did you mean by that?
So, you know, we go back to, and I certainly don't want to minimize the civil rights movement and integration and things of that nature. I just don't know necessarily that that was the right fight at the time. And so, when we look at history and when black people or Africans in America succeeded educationally, it was when we had our own schools, the one-room schoolhouse or homeschooled or whatever it was. And so when the fight for integration happened, and what we were really saying is we're putting public dollars into this system, yet the resources that are coming to us don't match that contribution. Mm-hmm. So the real argument was give us equal access to resources, not necessarily bus me 50 miles down the road so that I could go to school with white children.
Right. Don't put the per capita on my head.
Right. And so I think had we shifted our argument and our fight to just saying we want access to resources so that we can educate our children the way we had been and then, you know, bolster them and make them even better, it would have been better for us. And so, the experiment didn't work. It's okay. Failed.
Second question for your loadedness, your bang-bangness, is when you say, you know, it wasn't designed for us, mm-hmm. What do you mean? Are you talking about our culture, that we can't, the environment? What exactly are you saying?
I'm talking about basic humanity and how black people have always been looked at in this country. And
But what is the design for us?
The system, the institution of education, the way it looks, right? These multiple layers, the political bureaucracy that is behind it. Who does it serve? And who does it serve well?
Right.
And it certainly isn't poor children or children that look like my son or my grandchildren or even your daughters, right?
Right, right. Now, listen, before we let Nancy respond, I got an announcement to make, and then I want to hold you callers at bay because Katina came out swinging, and I know, I know we got some people on that line. So let me give the call-in number so you guys can prepare for that, 816-931-5534. But we have a very special guest coming in next week. We have Wheeler Parker coming into town, Reverend Wheeler Parker. He was an eyewitness account to the whistling incident, and he is also the one they left in the bed, mm-hmm. you know, when they pulled Emmett Till out of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so he will be here next Thursday in the studio, and following that, at 7 p.m., the Masquerade Event Ballroom, we will be there, and he will be our keynote speaker. We have several representatives from the SCLC, the NAACP, Moore Squared. We have some of our local representatives that will be there. And we're just asking and hoping that you guys will join the effort and this is 3027 Walnut, Kansas City, Missouri, 64108. And this event will be pre-recorded. And so just come and be ready to answer, ask some questions of the panel and our keynote speaker that evening. This will be what we call the beginning of trying to sustain the African American community with its own people. Okay?
So I don't mean to correct you on this, but did you say pre-recorded? You mean it's going to be recorded?
It's going to be recorded, and then it will be
available
aired
later.
Here.
Okay, so it'll be
KK
available
by.
Later. But
yes,
you got y'all want to come down and see it live if possible.
Yes.
This is going to be a
3027 Walnut Street.
Historic event in Kansas City. It really is. And it's our pleasure to have, and Khadija actually arranged this, to get Reverend Wheeler Parker here live in the studio with us for the hour next week at 9 o'clock. So tune in for sure next week.
Spirit-driven work, yeah. So
and let's also welcome our other guest, Nancy, again. And
good morning.
Yeah. What are your thoughts about equity versus equality? Because I'm right on with that. I agree with Katina, but we all probably have a slightly different definition of what we think equity is as opposed to equality.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me here, and it's a pleasure to be here this morning. You know, I speak as a white woman. I speak from a different perspective because I haven't lived the same story that you're living. So my experience is just in how I serve around the city and community partnerships. And one of the things that really became inequitable is that when children were removed from the community to go to a school that was supposedly providing equality, they removed them from the community that could actually form a net of a family, a sense of community around them. And that has been missing for a lot of children. And it's a very critical piece of their education and a piece of feeling hopeful for their future and feeling like they have a dream and they belong in the community. So from my perspective, that's the bigger thing that I have observed all over the city, is that kids do not feel connected to their community because of what has happened, our history of separating them from their own community in order to receive an equal or an equitable education. So I'm not an educator. I'm a community mobilizer, so I'm not an expert on education or curriculum or any of those things, but it is the driving force behind what we do is trying to re-engage that community around the school.
So neighborhood schools, right?
Neighborhood schools, yes.
You dismantle that, you dismantle a neighborhood or community, right?
Well, it's so critical.
You know, when I'm hearing the word community, I mean, I think that steps outside the boundaries of just education. I mean, we're talking about libraries, we're talking about resourceful things within that neighborhood that connect to the school. That's the issue, is that you don't have those resources. I mean, you have the neighborhood school, but beyond walking out the door or getting on the bus or even walking, in some instances, there's nothing for you to see. Right. There's nothing for you to gravitate to.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely true.
That, absolutely to true. Me, boils down to our leadership.
What leadership?
Katina is over here, y'all. She
I think
ready
I need
to swing
a cup of coffee or something.
Well, the leadership at City Hall, for instance. I mean, you know, if we're talking about Kansas City right now, the 3rd and 5th District. I mean, even though we have representatives and that pie is supposed to be sliced up some kind of way equally, or maybe not even equally, but fairly, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not being diced up that way. For some reason, we can't even get the crumbs off the table.
Well, you know, I think everybody plays a role, right? And so we have to position ourselves as citizens to force our elected officials who serve us, right? They are servant leaders.
You said force.
No, well, yeah. You have to get behind
them. I'm just making sure the callers are understanding what you're saying. So when they call in,
you have to advocate for your own self, right? And so if we're talking about infrastructure, if we're talking about economic development in our community, who is holding their feet to the fire to say that this is what we want, this is what we deserve, and then we position ourselves to go in and actually demand that it happens.
So when you don't get a phone call back, you just should show up.
Absolutely. Why not? I do. And most of the time when I've done that, I've gotten what I've needed.
Right. And I agree with you, and there's strength in numbers.
Absolutely.
So we have a caller on the air, and we want you to state your name, what part of town you're in, and
you're on the air.
Hey, this is Barry Jackson from Kansas City.
Hey, Barry.
What's
Jackson.
Up, Barry?
How you doing, man?
Good morning to you all. Good morning to your guests. I respect you.
Good morning.
We respect you too.
The thing that I have just seen over the years, not only as it relates to education, but just economic development. You know, my father was one of the first black men to hold a business franchise in this city, in real estate. And we literally had our own version of Black Wall Street right on 27th and Prospect. Mm-hmm. You had a black-owned hardware store. There was a barbershop. There was, the real estate office, Robbins, Gross, and Jackson, that my father was helped found. An insurance company. I mean, it was kind of a one-stop area for a lot of different things that we had. And as a result of integration, and it gave black people more choices, because we could, you know, this was after the time that we were able to move south of 27th Street. But in the process of integration, I think it seemed to me there was an effort to dissuade us from continuing to support the businesses within our own community. And it kept us from keeping a dollar from circulating more than just two or three times before that dollar left the community. And it didn't spur enough economic development. And, you know, the white-owned businesses that we had, like grocery stores, they eventually deserted us, which created all these food deserts that we have. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like it just perplexes yours truly to understand, you know, why it seems like we're talking a foreign language when we talk, when we, you know, want to go and talk in terms of bringing back that economic development. Because when you take the cultural and business economic amenities from a community, it shouldn't be any surprise that community winds up feeding on itself the way ours has.
Absolutely.
Right. I think it's a compromising mentality that we have, because oftentimes, you know, we hear the words no, mm-hmm. and we assume that's the end-all, the be-all. And because of the condition that African-Americans have been put through, the compromise is there. And I see it all too often. I'm going to give you an example. This may not have much to do with education, but the whole Ivanka Trump issue with her brand being in several retail stores. I once said that, you know, I'm going to boycott these stores. Someone asked me, why would you boycott the store? Why don't you just boycott the product? Well, who put the product in the store? You know what I mean? And yeah. Oh, I need to shop at these stores because I'm a business owner. I get better rates. I need this to survive. All that is compromising. The situation. And we do it so often that we have compromised our education away. We've compromised our business away. With all this, we want to be integrated. That doesn't mean that we don't love other people or that we don't want to be around other people. It just means that we want to keep what we have.
And I think, you know, I'm not an anthropologist by any means or a sociologist, but I read, right? I read, I study, I ask a lot of questions. I'm that kid that was like, you know, why? And so when I look at a lot of information that's out there in regards to just human development, human nature, right, we have... if we look at culture groups, they stay amongst themselves. And even in 2017, in Kansas City, Missouri, mm-hmm. when we look at the Hispanic population or the Asian population or even the African population, they are segregated in a way, even mm-hmm. though they're part of the larger Absolutely. Kansas City area. But when you look at us, Africans in America that have a different story, right? We didn't necessarily integrate or we weren't immigrants that came here. We weren't refugees, right?
Mm-hmm. And we were products right? on
so,
a ship.
Yeah, we were commodities. So now here we are, and I think we suffer from their ice is colder, right? Mm-hmm. So that Black Wall Street that was on 18th and Vine or 27th and Prospect, when we had the opportunity to spread our wings thinking that this city or that some other people has something better to offer us, we fail for what, we call the okey-doke, right? Let's mm-hmm. just break it down and have a real conversation.
Bamboozle.
And so we didn't look long-term to what those implications would be for us. So now when we look at the lower tax base, the dollars not being in our community, the infrastructure not being built up, and the decay and the decline in our neighborhoods, this is what we deal with. So we were so busy asking, can we didn't ask, should we? And so this is the result.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that have been done that were done with good intentions. Let's face it, they weren't doing busing in order to intentionally screw people around, because that would have affected white kids in a negative way too. Pardon me?
The magnet schools, or what?
I'm talking about busing. When we did the busing, which I think Katina was referring to, which it took kids out of their community, and what Nancy was saying was that breaks down the envelope of the community support that kids need.
Well,
so busing was not done in order to, you know, harm black kids, because that would have also harmed white kids at the same time. So accusing anybody of doing that.
I'm going to challenge you and give you some pushback on that.
Really?
Yeah,
well,
absolutely. You know, you talk about, you said, sorry, that it wasn't done intentionally.
Well, it was done as a policy.
As a policy, but no without doubt. Thinking about the impact of that policy on the most vulnerable citizens at the time. Because when you have white families, middle class, upper middle class, that have an opportunity to have flight and say, regardless of what this policy says, I am not going to have my children in school with your children, and then they leave and they take their tax base with them. They knew that that could happen. They knew that that was a possibility.
I don't think they knew that.
Absolutely.
They did.
People don't think of that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
policymakers think of that stuff. People in power think of that stuff.
They think of it 10 years.
You're naive if you think that.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I'm going to respectfully disagree with you on that.
Well, you can disagree. That's why we have this conversation.
Absolutely.
But what I'm saying is that, do you think that white people, if they were doing things only for white people, so let's imagine for a second that white people are doing things just to serve themselves.
It's happening right now.
Would they? It does happen.
It's
There's no doubt.
Now.
There's no doubt. But let's just hear me through, okay? Would white people who wanted to do things for white people say, well, let's bring these, we're talking about people that want to get away from black people, right? Would they actually bring black people into their schools intentionally without thinking there was something good
the
that
honest,
they were going to do for
the
that for all
about
people?
We were on a
is,
national
is
stage.
Most of them, most black kids didn't leave the city. That's the honest answer to that. I went to Central High School when it was a magnet, and we had people coming in from all over the country utilizing that school and being protected and shielded as they walked in and out of that school. So, and none of us, I had the same classmates before the school changed and was built as I did when the school was actually there. And so none of them left. None of them had the opportunity to go to Lee Summit, anywhere else. But we had a lot of people who utilized what we thought was ours.
You guys are making great points. You're making great points, but you haven't answered my question. Would white people who wanted to get away from black people intentionally bring black people into their schools?
You have to understand that the people on the ground were not making policy.
When you don't look at black people as people.
And there's always a strategy.
And black people have never been looked at as people. We're two-thirds of a human being. And so if you look at a product, you got to be next to your product so it sells well. I'm just saying.
I hardly think that we were busing black kids into schools so that we could sell a product to them, because they were bused home after that.
We are the product.
We've got a caller. Let's take our caller
online,
too.
You put a dollar sign on African Americans' head. You put dollar signs on students' head, and that is a product, no matter how you look at it. But caller, state your name and what area of town you're calling from.
This is a good conversation.
Khadija, this is Brother Love, and I want to say that I am so proud of you. You and your father and that girl in there with time listening to you. I'm 100% agreement with you.
Hey, Brother Ron, we're having just a little bit of trouble hearing you. Can you move a little bit or something? We're getting a lot of static on the line.
I'm saying that I totally agree with Khadija and the girl that's in there with her. I commend her and her father doing such an excellent job in raising her and the way that she thinks, because she is correct in her analysis of what she is saying. I'm with her wholeheartedly. We have desegregated our community. We went somewhere else, and the money stopped coming into our community three times. The money circulated in our community three times when they were segregated. You took the money out of our community and turned our community into a ghetto, into a slum. We don't have people representing the needs of the people in our community. Our representatives are nothing else. Somebody has to represent us. and she is doing an excellent job at it. All the way up to the Attorney General. I have 585 acres of land up in Oklahoma. Is the Attorney General protecting my property, my oil wells? Hell no. And it's been in my property and my family for 210 years. Paying these taxes, the Devon Energy Corporation is stealing from me, and the Attorney General is helping him. What the hell are you talking about? She's right.
All right. Thanks, Brother Ron.
Thank you, brother.
You know, obviously, we have a disagreement about this. And what I want to say, and I'm not the representative of all white people, okay? But what I want to say is I don't think that part of the solution is to actually accuse white folks of intentionally trying to harm black kids. They were trying to do that to help everyone.
I experienced it. I experienced it in my high school. So I'm not telling you something that is made up. I'm telling you something I saw with my own eyes. And I'm not oblivious to the things I see. I see them how they are. And that's the way it was.
And I want to say, it's not accusatory of individual white people. However, if we're going to have a real conversation, we have to learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable and telling the truth about the history and the legacy of how this country was built, the policies that have been in place, and who they have harmed consistently. And if that hasn't been intentional, please help me understand how that hasn't been. You know, I look at places, where did redlining start? Right here in Kansas City?
Truth, divide line.
And it went where? All over the nation, right?
Right.
So that was intentional, right?
No doubt.
There were policymakers, politicians, religious leaders, people saying this is not going to be good, not just for this particular city, but for the country as a whole. And it still moved forward. So if that wasn't intentional, tell me how it could not have been. And there have been other things that have happened in our country, in our city, that certainly have been intentional. It has been, and if it's not directly intentional to impact people that look like me, Africans in America, it certainly has been intentional in a way that I don't value your humanity and your contribution and what you can contribute to this society. You are nothing to me. Therefore, how you are impacted by a policy that I enact, it doesn't matter.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes, and there's an article out there that says, to hell with good intentions. I hope I don't get us in trouble, right? But I'm quoting the article.
Hey,
that's the title.
Coming out your mouth, not mine. I'm not.
You should read it. Because sometimes your intention doesn't matter. Is do you think about the impact upon the people that will have to live under a particular policy that you create?
Could I say something here?
Absolutely.
You really need Gary Schmitz here from the Citywide Prayer Movement, because he's worked really hard in this whole area of trying to build relationships across racial lines. And we've had many gatherings around that. And I have a question for you. I would like to know, how do we move forward from here? It's difficult to really determine what were the motives in the hearts of the people in the day. You know, I can't really do that.
Good point.
I didn't experience what you experienced. So I can't go there, but I believe you and I believe your experience. And I've heard it
before. Have you heard the phrase, make America great again?
Well, yeah,
okay.
I have. What I'm trying to say is that for me, the journey began with somebody who really cared enough about me to bring me in,
mm-hmm.
which you're doing right now. And you're doing that across the city, and people are hearing this. And this person has become a good friend. We've been on the journey. We went to Birmingham to a conference.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first time in my life, I saw Birmingham through the eyes of my friend. And it changed my entire paradigm. I think there's something to be said about reaching across and not predetermining the heart of the person who's sitting across from you, that they already have all these preconceived ideas and notions about how what your experience has been, because we may or we may not. I can't speak for everybody. But what she did was she brought me into her real life experience. And we have been on the journey ever since. And that night, we went back to the hotel room. And the two of us just stared at the ceiling in the dark. And we both just cried through the night. As she shared her story, I shared my story. We got to know each other and what our journey was like.
That's a beautiful story. And that's a beautiful encounter. A great thing for a foundation.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And I just wonder what would happen, though, if
there
we
was
had,
truth in that, though, right?
There was definitely truth
and
in
there,
that.
And there was vulnerability.
And pain, a lot of pain. And it just, my eyes opened, and I was an adult woman who've lived through this.
Right.
I'm 65 years old, so I've lived through this whole thing.
Let me ask you a question. I know you're asking me a question, but I heard your story, and I just have to ask you a question. How did your privilege play into that? Why privilege?
My privilege played into that I got to have the experience of being able to go.
Did it make you think about your privilege?
Oh, yes,
definitely. Your privilege is utilized
absolutely
by white people in that.
And I'll tell you something else. What it did for me, the things that I thought, because I came from a pretty dysfunctional family, and the things that I thought were lack of privilege were not.
Mm-hmm.
They were not. And it gave me a new view of how incredibly blessed I was in the growing up years when I came from a very dysfunctional family, because I had privilege simply because I'm white. And I do believe that.
Absolutely.
I know that. And I saw that through her eyes. And it's taken me on a journey. I'm just saying, let's talk about ways that we can reach across.
And that's what I wanted to get back to, and that's why I asked you about truth.
Okay. Yeah,
we have two callers holding and one that's just dialed in. So we actually have three callers.
All right.
First caller, you're online, and what is your name and area town that you are calling in from? You're on the air. Go ahead.
This is Barry Jackson again, and the reason why I had to call back was because you started talking about those schools. You're listening to somebody who experienced how no matter – how many times we had to go to court after Brown versus Speaker Board of Education,
mm-hmm.
the resistance to integration of our schools just continued over and over and over. I experienced being blessed to a predominantly white school, but they made sure that everybody in my grade, I was in fifth grade at the time, fifth and sixth graders coming from the black community, these schools were not, they were integrated only in that the building was integrated. White kids got, the white students were going, their classes were held on the first floor, and it's a two-story building, and black kids were held in, had classes on the second floor.
You never hardly saw them, did you?
Huh?
You never hardly saw them, did you?
The only time we saw them was in the cafeteria at lunchtime, because some of the kids worked in the cafeteria with the cafeteria workers. And, in fact, our teachers rode the school bus to the school with students. So we had separate classrooms, separate teachers, separate recess, separate lunch breaks. And, of course, they had to go, it was necessary to go back to court to let the judicial system know these people, these folks in this district flatly refused to implement the plan for integrating our schools. And this has been, this was going on all around the country, because even as recent as 1992, federal courts had to go after the Wheaton Illinois School District for doing the same thing in 92 that was being done in 1965.
You're absolutely right.
People just flatly refuse. If somebody doesn't want to do something, they will find all kinds of ways to not do it.
Absolutely.
No question about that. And I'm not denying that there are many things that were buried. Hang on. I'm not denying that there are many things done intentionally against African Americans. I think I've made that clear on this show many, many, many times. And I would like to quote Frederick Douglass, which kind of goes along with what Katina was saying earlier. Power concedes nothing without demand.
That's right.
So maybe our President Donald Trump doesn't know who Frederick Douglass is, but I do know who he is.
You don't know he's dead.
Right.
And neither does his
staff, apparently.
Yeah,
right.
All right, let's see if Barry has a final comment. Let's wrap it up really quick, Barry.
The effort now more is to just criminalize our kids and put them out of school altogether so some people don't have to deal with them.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we do have two other callers, Barry.
Pipeline.
Thank you for calling back. Anything to wrap up?
Barry? No, I just say thank you for letting me take. I'll listen to the rest of the show from here
thank
on out.
Thank you for calling in.
Hey, man, thanks for calling in. If you don't know this, Barry has a show on KKFI, and it's a good show to listen to. He plays a lot of good music. So tune in to Barry Jackson's show. We do have another caller. Caller, you are on the air. What's your name and what area of town you're calling in from?
This is Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca.
I'm calling Crossroads. Yeah, I guess I wanted to say that in listening to this program and being a member of other Black Lives Matter type organizations, so to speak, and being a white woman, I am starting to feel like I'm not wanted, that you don't need to show up. This is our problem, and we're going to solve it. That I automatically feel as though that I couldn't possibly understand, or I couldn't possibly be sympathetic, that I couldn't possibly not be thriving on white privilege. And I don't really think all those things are true. Of course I can't. I do get the righteous indignation that is being expressed. What has happened and what continues to happen, it would be an enormous powder keg of anger. But in expressing that, I too would like to be given a chance to say, we're all in this, we're all human, we all deserve to be respected and not automatically assumed to be the enemy. I don't want to be the enemy. I'm trying very hard not to be. I'm trying very hard to understand life from a person who's poor, for example, not even black or white. But what does it feel like to go day to day, having to struggle constantly, work longer and harder and struggle in all kinds of ways? And I'm trying to see life through those lenses. And anyway, I just had to say that I think in terms of dealing with the natural anger that exists, and again, trust me, I have no problem with the anger, but I would also like that to be tempered with a certain amount of willingness to allow others to be on the same team. And that's really all I have to say.
All right. Hey, Rebecca, thank you for voicing that this morning. Really appreciate that.
Yeah, Rebecca, I appreciate you calling in and allowing yourself to be vulnerable. The problem I have, especially like in education reform or changing the trajectory in our community as it relates to Africans in America, black folk, is that who leads those conversations? You are welcome to be an ally, and I think all people are welcome to be an ally. But if the people who have an issue and have consistently had an issue with oppression, with prejudice, with all of these things, mass incarceration, the deterioration of the family, aren't allowed to lead the movement to change it, and our voices not to be heard, then the anger continues, the frustration continues, and the fact that you feel not wanted, and by no means am I saying this to be cruel, but I want to be honest here, is welcome to our world.
Hello.
Now you feel what we have felt, what our parents, our grandparents, our children, my grandchildren may one day feel. So when you can tune in, touch that piece, then your level of empathy and compassion grows. And then now we're ready to do some real work.
I think the other issue there, too, is that, and this may sound painful and it may hurt your feelings, I'm not going to apologize for it, but it's the fact that you want to see something happen and you want to see it through your eyes. You want the results to be the way you want to see them. And that's just not going to happen. It's not about you. It's really about the plight of African-American people and what they want and their outcomes. And so at the end of the day, as hard as it is to be interjected in an uncomfortable situation like that, you have to let it play out to the way and the tune that African-Americans feel, because we have suffered over 400 years. That is not an easy suffering. We were whipped. We were lashed. We hear the stories over and over. Matter of fact, just as we speak here and I'm sitting here talking to you, there are things happening with the Emmett Till family. The fact that a white woman lied for so many years and was willing to take it to her grave, the fact that we know that that type of thing happens amongst the white race all the time, white women accusing black men of things that they did not do, and the black man is later acquitted after they have went through so many things, that's a trust issue. There's boundaries there, and you have to break those things down, and it's not going to happen through the eyes, your eyes only. So you have to be able to be willing to see from the African-American's perspective and where that anger comes from and deeply understand it. And if you can't do that, I mean, you have to step out of the privilege.
It's something that Nancy was talking about earlier, which is we have to try to empathize with each other. And Khadija's making a great point here. I thought Rebecca was very courageous in calling in and sharing what she shared.
Yeah, absolutely. She brought a whole life to the conversation.
And we appreciate you bringing that, and also I think that's a good remark that Khadija just made, which is, you know, we got to be willing to step back and really understand that we are not seeing this through African-American eyes. There's no way I can
Absolutely.
As a white person. So we do have two other callers, but I want to first say that we're going to get to talking about these two organizations, Dreams KC. We want to hear what Katina is doing. We also want to hear what Nancy is doing. So let's take these two callers, and then we'll get to that, because there are some important things going on in education in Kansas City.
Absolutely.
So caller number one, you are on the air. What area of town, and what's your first name?
Well, this is Kurt from the East Side.
Kurt, thanks for calling.
Hey, Kurt.
I just want to be a white guy and disagree with Keith. I'm sure that there were allies in the justice system that were trying to do right by the African-American community. But, I mean, overwhelmingly, they just lost. I mean, their hands were tied. You know, the power structure, the corporate community, the bigotry, they're winning, and they're winning today. And, you know, I can go on and talk about corporations and how black people can be a part of the corporate. I stayed out of it. I've been a low-wage worker all my life. And, you know, proud to not be a gatekeeper to keep other people down. And I think that's what you do when you join the middle class. That's just my opinion. You guys are having a great show. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for calling in today, Kurt. And by the way, you're in total agreement with me. I would say you're right on point there, that we are still living in a mostly white world, and that what I said earlier about what Frederick Douglass said, which is power concedes nothing without demand. And, you know, when we were working with folks in Moore Squared, and, you know, they're still going, doing, you know, a good job, and they're going to be at the event next week, right, Khadija?
Pastor Brooks will give a presentation.
Yeah. You know, we talked often about that quote and many others that Frederick Douglass made. We do have one more caller, then we're going to talk a little bit about education with these two ladies. So, caller, you're on the air. What area of town are you calling in from, and what's your first name?
It's Brother Love again. I'm calling because there's a thing called the rule of law. Hello?
We're here. We're listening.
You're here. Yeah, there's just an echo
coming
through.
The rule of law, no one is above the Constitution. And when you have these corporations that think they're above the rule, see, these people don't know the difference from Judge Judy or the Supreme Court. And there's a lower court, then you have a Supreme Court. You have a Ninth District Court. You have they call it the circus. You want to make yourself. Then you have a Supreme Court, the Supreme Court of the land. You want to take away the rights. Be able to go to the Supreme Court, like this energy corporation and others, when you take the Attorney General and stop us, or you take Jeff Sessions and you put him in office, and you know he can stop us. Civil rights are human rights. And then you psychopathically rewrite his from a racial eugenic standpoint. He tells children to come out of Africa, you know, people voting those that they voted for.
Brother Love, I agree with you to a degree. But part of this upcoming event is to stop the notion that the government has any control over us and our destiny. I mean, right now the government, we're not even on a government radar. Immigration is, you know, black people don't matter right now. So let's just stop with the whole idea that government is scaring us and they doing X, Y, and Z. I hate to say it, but I'm kind of sick of it. And I am ready to do something on my own for my people. And I want them to do something on their own for their people and sustain it. We have to get away from this idea. It is time for us to get away from the idea that the government controls us. It is time for us to understand that educating our kids comes from us.
Absolutely.
It doesn't come from the government. And the more that they give you, the more they have control over you. And I'm not willing to allow someone to continue to control us.
I love it. Brother Love, quick comment, just a quick comment to end up here. I think he's, we may have lost him there. So let's talk a little bit about First Dreams, KC. Tell everybody what you're doing, Katina, because I went to your movie last week, and it's pretty exciting stuff.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So Dreams, KC, a new school model that's being proposed for the city of Kansas City, starting with kindergarten and building one grade level each year until we reach sixth grade, and then we'll launch a junior high school model, I don't believe in middle school, and then a high school model with the option of students being able to opt out at 16. I'm tired of us doing the same wrong things a little bit better and expecting different results. I'm tired of us looking for a magic bullet and thinking that we're going to transform education. We have been involved in a system with people year after year saying, give us 5 years, give us 10 years, we're going to get this plan together, and our children continue to suffer. If we were making an ink pen, a product, that'd be different. We'd have time to get it right. But we're dealing with the lives of our young people, so we don't have time because they don't have time. They have an infinite amount of time for us to educate them so that they are strengthened to be liberated, and that's what Dreams KC wants to do. So it's a whole child model that centers around developing their personal, professional, civic, and entrepreneurial competencies. And we do that through project-based learning, using adaptive technology, culturally relevant pedagogy, wraparound services, authentic parent engagement in an open and flexible learning space. Why are we still holding on to a public school system? And this is not to demonize KCPS. I'm talking about public school education across the country that is failing children. And really and truly, when we look at even in suburban areas, rural areas as well, children are suffering. I have people that I know at the college level, and many, many, many of our students are going to college and having to take remedial classes. Gone are the days where they're graduating in 4 years,
yeah, you're
right?
Paying for an extra year of college.
Or more. Yeah, you know, yeah. On average, I mean, it's between 5 and 6 years for college graduates anymore. But then what about the students? We need to stop lying to them and telling them that everyone's going to go to college. What if they don't desire to go to college? So we need to position them to own their own businesses. We need to position them to go into trades, and we want to be that conduit to do that through Dreams KC. So that's what we're working on. We're gearing up for our pilot. Well, we'll do an 8-week pilot with about 10 students to track data and make sure that we're building it out for students. So we don't have a build it and they will come mentality. No, we've spent a year initially just talking to students. Then we broadened that to talk to parents, the faith community, and we've had ongoing conversations because we want to do with the community, not to the community.
Awesome.
Wow. Hey, that's great.
Sounds
that's
like awesome. You're very passionate.
I absolutely am.
And I do want to mention that she has been a school teacher, so she's been in the system.
17 years.
Yeah.
Listen, that came straight off the dome. There's no notes here. There's no nothing.
Right.
And, I mean, that was great.
Thank you so much.
Actually, yeah, the first time I talked with Katina on the phone, I mean, she enlightened me on a lot of things. So this is a woman who's very educated herself. You're also a lawyer, right?
I do have my JD, yes.
Yeah.
And doesn't bite her tongue.
So
I'm learning to be more politically correct.
Listen, I've been in a meeting with Katina and left out like, who she thinks she is. They had to draw back like, okay.
And we don't take it personal though, right?
No, we don't.
Not at all.
So let's learn. Thank you for that. Let's learn a little bit about Caring for Kids Network, Nancy.
Okay, well, thank you. Katina, that's great.
Thank you.
You inspire me. That is just an exciting model. And is that STEAM?
Project-based learning could be, but it really incorporates all curriculum areas.
Okay.
And what it really does, when you talk about that net of the community,
right,
that's exactly what it does. It makes learning relevant for students. They identify questions or problems that exist in their community,
uh-huh,
and then we empower them to solve those problems
right
themselves.
I love that.
And we support them in doing that.
Yes.
So teachers now facilitate learning.
Uh-huh.
We are not the sage on the stage. We're not opening their heads and trying to pour knowledge in from our perspective and our
right
experiences. We're letting them develop and explore that natural curiosity and understand that they, even as young people, can solve problems in their own community.
That's affirming.
Yes,
very,
it absolutely
affirming
is affirming.
And empowering and,
yes,
yes, experiencing success.
Yes, absolutely.
With the gifts that they've been given.
Yes.
So, okay, well, Caring for Kids takes it from a little different perspective, and what I shared earlier about the community, we became aware that people in the community really do care about kids. We all care about kids. Mm-hmm. Whatever our perspective is, we all care about kids. We want to see them grow up to be successful and healthy, and we want them to succeed. I think most people do, maybe not all, but our thought, as we engaged in the community, it was really kind of came out of a faith network. where a group of pastors decided they would like to serve the community together, you know, just serve together with no agenda. What could we do? And it turned out to be the schools here in Kansas City. So they did a major renovation project in five schools. What was the aha in that was it wasn't just the faith community. The business community came out, the civic community. So now we had people across denominational lines. We had people of different faiths. We had people of different races. We had the business. We had the civic. And they were all working together. And they renovated five schools in about 4 hours. There were several hundred volunteers.
Oh, wow.
So here's what we learned from that. It was very inspirational that there is something here that needs to be stewarded or needs to be connected, and there isn't anybody to pull those pieces together. So we, you know, I know that there are many, many faith partners in schools. There's business partners, but they're all kind of siloing and doing things individually, approaching, you know, principals individually, and not sure where to begin. So we went to work on a process, and we wanted to figure out how could we design a process that goes to the educators who are the experts in the field like you and say, how can we serve you with your goals for these students? Mm-hmm. How can we come up underneath you and your teachers? That's the whole thing of caring for kids. Mm-hmm. We don't bring a program. We don't have an idea of how to do it or, you know, what we think you should do. We come in and we say, we would like to help you serve you by bringing community organizations around the school that are in that area, in mm-hmm. the neighborhood.
So how do you get your volunteers, and how do
That's
you process
That's a good question.
Them?
We work, the process, the first part of the process is we do start with the school district, mm-hmm. and we talk with them about what they would like us to do. Same question, how can we help you achieve your goals? And they target some schools that they think would really benefit from partnerships, and then we just do the work of, we have several networks around the city we work through, and chambers of commerce and so forth, and we just go to work envisioning people, coffee with the superintendent, we gather them, you know, and the superintendent will come and speak, and then we do that. We have a team of four, and we, after we have three or four partners for each school, mm-hmm. then we bring them all together for the targeted school. So say there's five or six, we bring them all together around a round table with the principal and just asking the question, how can we help you? And I think the key that makes this work, the glue of it, is what I was talking about earlier. It's the relationship.
What's the criteria around getting a volunteer? Are there background checks? Because
yes. Okay. So what
Absolutely.
We do is
I just had to ask. I'm sorry.
No,
it's a good question.
It's a really good question. And it's the school district actually does the vetting of the volunteers.
Okay.
Because they are legally responsible to do that and ensure that that's done properly. And every school district, we started about the time Youth Friends left.
Mm-hmm.
And so each school district had to come up with their own process of screening and vetting their volunteers. What we do is we vet them from this standpoint. We tell them, you know, kind of what the needs are in the school district. We tell them, if you're planning on doing a one-time event, this is not the program for you. This is not the organization to connect with, because mm-hmm. we're asking for commitment. Mm-hmm. And we really talk strongly about that. If you're going to be involved in this, you need to be there, not only for the school. They've been let down a lot by the community, but for those kids. They need that consistency. So we vet that part of it, and they vet the actual
So we
volunteers.
Have a caller. State your name, what part of time you're calling from, and you're on the air.
Yeah, this is Bingo calling in from Waldo.
Hey, Bingo.
Hello.
I wanted
What's up,
to man?
Make a few comments here because I've been kind of studying up on all this kind of stuff. I taught in New York City and all the different systems they have there for about 18 years, and that included working in the system in Washington, D.C., which is famous for how messed up it is.
Right.
I taught all different colors and ages and backgrounds, and what I observed was that our basic experience of life is not different. Our basic needs do not differ. And by that, I mean we need food, we want to feel loved, we want a meaningful kind of work, not mm-hmm. just a job. We want to feel acknowledged, we want to feel cared for, and these are universal things. Now, when television came along, it made the education system obsolete because the kid nowadays can get all at once complete involvement from video games and television that schools can't offer, the way they still divide up the subjects and dole out education a little at a time. The kids need to be taught to explore and helped with that, not keep getting more and more severe punishment for not wishing to participate in something that's totally mm-hmm. inadequate by design, and kids know that. So the core question of this for me is, do people believe that people like politicians care anything about anyone You know, you can always choose to care or not care individually. Or is it possible they would be doing evil to all of us to serve their own or others' agendas? And to finish, I'd like to say beliefs are not facts. Facts can be observed and verified. I want facts.
I like that bingo.
Hey. I don't want unverifiable so-called information. If you can't check it, it's not good information.
Mm-hmm.
And
Absolutely.
Kids know that.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is the show me state.
That's it.
What needs to be taught, in my opinion, is on people, you got to go one by one. Stop dividing up into groups, and let's start working together.
Amen.
And thank
I
you very
you,
much
bingo.
For being on the air. I support you 100%.
That was great.
Thanks
bingo.
For calling in, Bingo. We love you.
So,
I have a question for you guys.
Go for it.
I should have asked this at the beginning of the show. What do you think of DeVos? Our educational secretary. The one with
That's a loaded question for sure. That's
it's an easy
loaded
question.
Bang, baby.
I know.
It's an easy question. I mean, I'm all about qualified people being in a position, right? Be that from experience, be that from credentials, be that from a combination of both. And she's just not qualified for the position. She could be a great businesswoman. She could be a great philanthropist. And that's wonderful. But when you don't understand the basics surrounding education and its impact for our children, you're just not qualified to hold a position. I mean, you could be a nice person, not a personal attack.
You could have opened up a charter school.
Absolutely.
Or not,
that failed or did not.
Right.
But just not the person for the job. Now, with that being said, however, there is certainly going to be a push at the state level and the national level to expand the charter movement, school choice, school vouchers. And rather than focus on whether or not she's the person for the job, because she has it, so that's not something that we cannot undo at this point.
I mean, she didn't even know simple math.
Right. The question becomes, how do we as a community strategically position ourselves to take advantage of what is coming down? So we need to be proactive versus reactive. And so, like, in regards to dreams, if we keep having these conversations in our community about educating our own children, let me see you put your legs to work, your hands to work, your dollars behind your conversation. Stop holding on to public education as if it has served you well. It hasn't. So therefore, with this new agenda in place, how do we use it to our advantage?
It's been serving you up with all them taxes.
Right?
What about you, Nancy? What do you think of DeVos?
Well, you know, I watched the hearings and all of that. I'm just not an expert. I just, you know, my preference would be somebody who has a broad experience in education, you know, in all the various spheres. And I didn't hear that or see that.
In her answering of the questions,
but I don't know enough about her really, other than what I've just read in the media, which, you know, and then what I experienced, and I just felt, you know, I would prefer a broader experience in the
hardcore,
you know, being in the urban core in those public schools is a different scenario, and you know, I just that was my only observation. She might do a great job. I don't know. I just don't know enough about her, but.
Quick question. We do have one more caller, and I've got a quick question that I want to ask before we get this caller on. Caller, just hang on for 1 second. That is, my belief is, from talking with a lot of African Americans, and I want to find out especially what the school teacher thinks, is should they learn mostly from people that look like them? What do you think?
That definitely is a loaded question, right? I've seen great teachers who are black. I've seen great teachers who are white. I want a teacher that is a high quality educator in front of our children, that is embedded in the community, that can be empathetic and understand the culture of the students in which they are teaching.
I think you have to be relatable. Too.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be relatable. And so a good teacher is a good teacher, black, white, purple, and green, right? And so that's what I'm about, high quality educators being in front of our children. Should more black teachers be in the profession? Absolutely. It does matter. Should more black principals, vice principals, instructional coaches, people other than custodial staff and cafeteria workers be in our schools? Absolutely. But that then also means that we have to go into the profession, and we haven't been. And so we have to then build up for our children that are currently students an appetite for learning and then wanting to serve other children that look like them later in life. And we haven't been doing that successfully.
Wow, that was really good. Thank you. That was very, very good. That was a good show. Ladies, thank you. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katina. Yeah, and
yes.
Thank you, Khadija Hardaway.
Yes, thank you so much.
No problem. Too bad.
All right, we're going to end as we always do. We had one caller on the line. I'm so sorry we couldn't get you on, but we have to get out of here because Larry J is coming up next. So don't go away. He's got that sweet Southern soul coming up for you right here on 90.1 FM KKFI. I'm Keith Washburn, and we're going to end it as we always do with Stevie Wonder.